You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Flyers, 6 p.m. tonight on TSN 1290, a game live at MTS Center. Always a little extra buzz in the air, as I find, for two things. One, when the Philadelphia Flyers are in town, they're not an original six team, but really of all the original six teams and the Flyers, they're almost third to me. Like, they're, you know, there's the Canadians and the Leafs, and they're 1-2. And then there's the Flyers, because of the such ties between the Flyers organization historically and the city of Winnipeg and the province of Manitoba, that there's always a ton of Flyers fans in attendance at MTS Center when they're in town. Always a little extra buzz, especially a Saturday night, the first Saturday night home game of the NHL season, and you add in the Flyers to it. I think it's going to be a fun night tonight at MTS Center. Ezra Ginsberg, the man on my left.
Yeah, good afternoon, Drew. I agree with you. For all of the 1967 expansion teams, you could make the strong argument that the Philadelphia Flyers are the most popular, not to say that the Blues and the Kings and other teams aren't, but you're right. There are so many connections with the Philadelphia Flyers and Manitoba, dating back to the Broad Street Bullies and Reggie Leach and Bobby Clark and Flin Flon. But even now, Dave Haxtell was the coach at UND just 2 hours south of us. And then you've got Ron Hextall, of course, from Manitoba, is the GM. And then you've got all of those ties that we talked about historically with the Flyers. So this Flyers team right now, Drew, is struggling big time. And the Jets are coming off a big point against the Senators in which it looked like they weren't going to get any points. But it's not going to be an easy game, because this Flyers team came into Winnipeg last December and it looked like the Jets were going to leave with 2 points. They scored late and then
Rob
they won
Zepp.
It in overtime. Yep, that's right.
The NHL debut of the not-so-legendary Rob Zepp in goal for the Philadelphia Flyers. We'll talk about the Flyers and the Jets, of course, throughout the program this afternoon.
Rob Zepp will not be in net for the Flyers.
Michael Neuwirth will be in net for the Flyers tonight. The Jets will counter with Andre Pavlik. And joining us on the program later on in the show, we'll have Dave Isaac, the Philadelphia Flyers beat writer from the Camden Courier-Post, joining us to talk about the Flyers. That's all coming up in the first hour. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. That's Ezra Ginsberg on my left. Richard Pollock is away this week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Whatever's on your mind, send us a tweet. If it's good enough, maybe we'll read it on air. If it's a picture of you barbecuing any sort of meat product, we'll probably retweet it. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with all your latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Before we look forward to the Flyers game this evening, let's look back at the four-game road trip. Of course, the Jets are in the midst of 8 out of 9 on the road. Played this most of this past week on the road, starting last Saturday with the road trip, where they went 2-1-1, finishing with that shootout loss to Ottawa on Thursday night, second half of the back-to-back. And, you know, when it was 2-0 Ottawa and the Jets sort of looked listless at that point in the game, I thought, okay, you know, 2-2 on the road trip is what you're going to see here. And then Andrew Ladd gets that goal late in the second period. Then Dustin Byfuglien with that just tremendous play on the defensive side, turning it into instant offense to tie the game at 2-2 early in the third period. And then that was a fun final, you know, 20, 25 minutes, including overtime in the Jets and the Sens game on Thursday night.
Well, Drew, the Jets absolutely dominated the third period, and I thought they dominated the overtime, maybe not as much as the third period, but certainly that third period, the Senators had trouble getting anything going offensively. And you're right, it was a gritty effort for the Jets. Second game of a back-to-back, down 2-0, and they end up getting a point, and they come very close to getting 2 points in regulation. So as a whole, the road trip was a big success. Sure, maybe you'd like to get the extra point in the Ottawa game, but you get points in 3 of 4 games. And for me, the most important part of the road trip was the response after the Montreal game, because the Montreal game to me was the worst game of the season, getting embarrassed in Montreal by a very good team, mind you, but still, the Jets didn't play the way they wanted to defensively. creating way too many turnovers that came back to bite them the other way. So I was really impressed with the way they played against the Senators. The Senators, as we know, they're not the most difficult team to play against, but they've got a lot of skill.
Yeah.
And I think the Ottawa Senators are still trying to find themselves. They're trying to really prove to themselves that I think that they're a playoff team, because last year they were out of it in January. And Andrew Hammond comes in, and they end up going on a miraculous run, and they're still trying to find their legs. And it's a good team, but they're not quite where they want to be. And sure, they miss Mark Stone, you know, serving the second game of a two-game suspension. But even with Mark Stone in the lineup, they're a little bit top-heavy, mm-hmm. and they struggle to create offense from other sources. I mean, we know how good the top line is. We know how good Kyle Turris has been. But for the Jets to end up leaving Canadian Tire Center with a point was really incredible, because at times in that game, they didn't really look into it. They looked like a team.
The first 30 minutes of that game, I thought that they were pretty, they had some control of the puck, but all
they're
the shots...
They're pretty average.
Yeah, all the shots were from the outside for the most part. None of them were especially threatening. And it just took that sort of, that late goal in the second period, the great pass by Wheeler onto the stick of Andrew Ladd from behind the net, and he catches Craig Anderson going the wrong way. And it was, that really, you could see, it gave the Jets life heading into the intermission and then into the third period, where Dustin Byfuglien really, we've seen those plays from Byfuglien before, and you sort of, you've seen them enough, you stop sort of marveling at them. That was such an impressive play he's one of the few players in the league who can pull off that kind of move and score in that fashion.
Yeah, and Paul Edmund said this during the game, and I was doing
pre and post with Rick,
and he's basically said Dustin Byfuglien and Blake Wheeler have put this team on their backs. And Byfuglien was amazing against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And to me, Drew, these last two games, the road games against Ottawa and Toronto, prove that good teams find ways to get points. The Jets didn't have a full 60-minute effort against the Leafs. They weren't particularly bad, but they also had moments in the game where it could have gone either way, and they weren't generating enough offense. They get 3 of 4 points in those games, and that's what good teams do. This is a team that now has the playoffs in the rearview mirror. They know that they want to get back there, and when you can get points in situations where for big parts of the game you weren't playing your best hockey, then that you're going in the right direction. And this Jets team right now is in a great position, because the road trip coming up after tonight is going to be very difficult.
The Central Division road trip.
And this Philadelphia Flyers team, as we know, Drew, is hurting big time right now. They're going to be desperate, though.
Yeah.
It's not going to be an easy game, but they should be able to get 2 points against a team right now that just can't score goals.
Well, you mentioned the Leafs game on Wednesday night, and sort of I think all the fans were waiting to see how the Jets were going to respond on Wednesday night after laying that stinker in Montreal on Sunday evening. And it wasn't pretty. I mean, you got the late goal where, after Burmistrov steps out of the penalty box after, as the expression goes, the doghouse to the penthouse, which for the record, I don't understand that expression anymore because my dog lives a pretty good life. So, it doesn't have a doghouse, let me tell you. My entire house is my dog's doghouse. So the dog lives a pretty good life. But from the outhouse to the penthouse, I could certainly understand a lot more. But he steps out of the box. Nice play with Wheeler with the passing play, and they end up getting the 2 points clean. You sort of expect you're always going to dominate the Leafs because they're just that bad. But they do play hard. I mean, one thing Mike Babcock demands is a hard-working, an effort-based performance.
They have no other option, Drew.
No, they don't have any skill.
This team doesn't have enough talent to win on a nightly basis. It's a team that, at best, finishes bottom five in the Eastern Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to do that, and Mike Babcock teams are going to play hard. And I agree with you. The Leafs gave a good effort against the Jets. And, you mentioned the doghouse to the penthouse, what Paul Maurice said. I think it was more so going from zero to hero, because if the Toronto Maple Leafs score with Alexander Burmistrov in the penalty box, mm-hmm. I don't think he plays the next game against Ottawa.
He's probably a healthy scratch for taking the two penalties. I would agree with that comment.
And we saw him do that against the Minnesota Wild. When the Minnesota Wild were at MTS Center and the Jets were up 5-1 a couple weeks ago, yeah. Burmistrov took that penalty, which he got fined for later, the elbowing penalty.
Yeah.
And I believe it was Mikko Koivu who scored after that, and the Wild ended up almost tying the game up. It was a 5-4 final, if you remember. So Burmistrov's taken some bad penalties this year. I actually think Burmy's started to play better as of late. He started to come on and get a little bit more comfortable with Adam Lowry and Drew Stafford on that third line, but he still has to cut out those minor penalties, especially at times when you just can't and you're either trailing or you've got the lead, it's just not a time to take the penalty. So I think Bermie's a guy that right now, even though he might not be in the doghouse, he's still a guy that I think Paul Maurice is looking at more intently than other players.
I don't disagree with that comment, just because I think with a player like Alex Burmistrov, who's only now, you know, 14 games back to being an NHL regular, you want to ensure that none of the bad habits that you may have seen in past creep back into his game. And I think that's what Paul Maurice, a little bit of tough love, but at the same time, you know, when he does something good, like scoring that game-winning goal, you know, you can see that Maurice and, you know, everybody that saw the reaction on the bench at the end of the game after the Jets escaped Toronto with the 2 points, Maurice sort of had that Cheshire grin on his face where he's like, okay, yeah, you did good by scoring, but don't think I don't remember the 2 penalties. So a little bit of tough love with the right hand, but embracing him with the left hand in that good job, but you know, you still can't get away with that most times. It's going to bite you in the behind.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And especially in a game like today with Andrew Kopp already out of the lineup,
yeah,
and Nick Batan out of the lineup with an illness.
And we'll talk about all the lineup changes coming up next segment when we preview the game.
They're going to need Bermie. I mean, yeah. Bermie's a key part of the team regardless, but especially when you have some of the younger players out of the lineup. Now you have Patrice Cormier coming in. So Burmistrov is going to have assignments against a talented Philly team. I mean, this Philadelphia team, even though they're not scoring right now, they've got a lot of firepower. The defense is a mess, but the goaltending is always good. They're not as bad as the record indicates. No. And if you think that this team is coming in here having lost 6 games in a row and they're just going to wilt to the Winnipeg Jets, it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. You're 100% right. And you look ahead to the schedule, never mind that. I mean, you got the game against Philly today, but then you look at the schedule for the next 4 games, all of whom are against Central Division opponents. And, you know, ad nauseum, we've talked about how difficult the Central Division is. You got Tuesday in Minnesota, you got Thursday in Dallas, you got Saturday in Nashville, and you got Monday in St. Louis.
Might be the hardest road trip of the year.
Well, you could make an argument, except that I'm sure that they have another road trip. I haven't looked at the schedule exactly in the back of my mind. I'm sure they have another 4-game road trip against Central Division teams some other time during the season.
Absolutely, and I think the reason why I say it might be the hardest road trip of the year is because at the timing of the season and the fact that you know the entire road trip is against the Central and all of these teams are playing well. You're not catching any of these teams kind of mid-season in a slump or whatever, and the Jets right now, I think it's even more difficult for them because they're trying to maintain their position in the middle of the pack of the Central Division, so they don't want to lose that position. So I'm not saying that they can't go on this road trip and win 3 or 4 games. They can do it, but it's those are some tough teams there.
Yeah, they have a road trip, really, the one that starts the month of January, where you're at San Jose, at Anaheim, at Nashville, yep, at Dallas, at Minnesota. That's also a very difficult road trip. In any event, let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look ahead to tonight's Jets and Flyers game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290.
The boards and it went over the head of one of the Jets in Perreault. Came back out towards center. Perreault takes a pass from Harrison. Crosses over the line. Back in toward the middle for Frolika's shot. Stop. Rebound. They score! Matthew Perreault on the doorstep. A great passing play by the Jets. And they've extended their lead. It's 3-1. Winnipeg!
That from last year's Jets Flyers game, Matthew Perreault scoring for the Winnipeg Jets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside my colleague Ezra Ginsberg. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. As you alluded to it off the top of the show, this Philadelphia Flyers team that's visiting Winnipeg this evening is a bit of a wounded animal. They are off to a pretty poor start on the season, 4-6-3. Good for 11 points and 6th place in the Metropolitan Division. They're currently on a 5-game road trip, a Western Canadian road trip. They've been in Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary as well. They've are 0-3-1 on their current 5-game road trip. They are winless in their last 6 games. Their power play, that's performing equally poorly, 0 for its last 16 opportunities over 7 games. This Philadelphia Flyers team, not very good so far in the standings, Yet you look at their roster, especially their offensive firepower, and you wonder, when is a guy like Jakub Voracek, he of the zero goals so far this season, when is he going to break out? Jets fans hope it isn't tonight at MTS Center.
You're talking about a guy in Jakub Voracek who finished top five in the NHL in scoring last year, and it's really incredible that he doesn't have a goal yet. And he was joking about it after practice the other day that he just doesn't know what he has to do, because if you look at how much he's been shooting, he's top 10 in the league again in shots. He's a guy that's always been not afraid to shoot the puck. But, you know, Drew, you mentioned the road trip, and they haven't won a game on this road trip, and they haven't won a game in their last six. I mean, this team had its warts before the season started, sure. And I think some of them you're starting to see already, but the lack of goal production is really surprising. Everybody knows how good Claude Giroux and Jakub Voracek is, and I know they've had some injuries, and Sean Couturier, you know, missed some games there, and he's back now, and they're expecting more out of him this year. But this Philadelphia Flyers team, I think, is still trying to find their identity under Dave Haxtell, and, you know, as we mentioned in the first segment, Michael Neuwirth is going to play. He's had quite a bit of success in Winnipeg, dating back to when he was with the Hershey Bears against the Manitoba Moose. So
sure, won a Calder Cup for the Bears against the Moose.
And you know that, you know, you're not going to get a lot of goals by him if he's on his game. But the makeup of this team, I think you're still seeing their inability to move the puck. That defense is still not where they want it to be.
No.
And players, like, you wonder how long they're going to keep a guy like Luke Shen around. And, you know, this Philly team,
he's an unrestricted free agent at season's end,
yeah,
I should point out.
I'd be surprised if he's back at this point, but we'll see. But, you know, this team brought in Michael Delzato last year. He's become a top four defenseman for them. He was a guy who couldn't crack the New York Rangers lineup.
Sure.
So it shows you how thin the Flyers have been on defense, you know, having to buy out Andrew McDonald there. It's just they don't produce enough offense from the blue line, Drew. But
they don't produce that much offense from the forward group either. If you look at them in terms of goals for on the year, 29th in the NHL with 25 goals for. So there's only one team worse than them in terms of putting the puck in the net. I mean, it's hard to believe. You look at, and you're completely right. This is a roster that certainly has a lot of warts. And I'm sure Ron Hextall, the Flyers' general manager, would be the first to tell you that. But, you know, when you have Claude Giroux and Jakub Voracek, and you have Wayne Simmonds as a guy who scored some goals in the NHL in the course of his career, you know, those guys have combined for a grand total of 5 goals, and Giroux accounts for 4 of those. You know, your best players, you know, it's one thing to expect your worst players to sort of take a step forward. But when your best players aren't even performing, it shows the real problems that this Philadelphia Flyers team has been having so far this season.
Right, Drew. And if you go further down the lineup, if you know, you get away from Claude Giroux and Jakub Voracek, they're two top players playing on that top line with Michael Raffel, who's the brother of Jets prospect Thomas Raffel.
Mm-hmm.
You go down the lineup, and they're actually pretty solid up the middle. We mentioned Sean Couturier, Vinny LeCavalier. Sam Gagne was actually a healthy scratch last game in favor of Vinny LeCavalier.
Not sure I understand that move.
They brought Gagne in to provide secondary offense.
You know, he's been doing a decent job at it.
Well, I mean, Gagne is a guy that has struggled to kind of duplicate the successful seasons. He was okay with Arizona last year, but Arizona, not much was going on there. The expectations weren't very high for him or the team, and he struggled a little bit. Sure, he has a couple goals for the Flyers, but Dave Haxtell's already had to scratch him. So players like Wayne Simmonds, Matt Reed, veterans of the team, these players have to step up in the absence of production from Jakub Voracek and Giroux. But for the Flyers, Drew, the issue has been that in years past, they've never had this issue. Even though the team has struggled, Claude Giroux and Jakub Voracek have always been there consistently, basically being point-of-game players, right?
Sure.
And now the offense has dried up from those two of their top players, and they haven't been able to find other sources of offense. So it's a real problem. Dave Haxtell was brought in partly for his ability to work with young players, had a great track record with UND developing players, you know, Parise, Taves, you can go on and on and on with all the players that he developed there.
Sure, the hockey factory that University of North Dakota is.
Right, and so a guy like Scott Laughton, he's starting to come on. I still think this Philadelphia Flyers team is going to turn it around.
Really?
I don't know if they make the playoffs, but I don't think they'll end up being as bad as they are right now.
It's hard to believe, to your point, sorry, it's interrupting you there. It's hard to believe that two guys like Voracek and Giroux aren't going to get their offense going. I mean, in a league where, you know, there's not that many top flight scorers anymore. Those two were 4th and 11th overall in scoring last season.
And it's not completely uncommon, Drew. I mean, Ryan Getzlaf, before he went down with an injury, had no goals.
Sure.
So, I mean, Ryan Getzlaf is a guy who represents Canada at the Olympics, and he's a guy who won the scoring race a couple years ago. So, I mean, it's not like other star players aren't snake-bitten, right?
Yeah,
but it's for this team... They just can't afford that.
They don't have any other. They don't have any secondary scoring. I mean, you know, we know what Sean Couturier is as a player at this point in his career. I mean, this is the guy who was taken. You know, the Jets. Sort of, you know, people thought the Jets were going to draft him when they drafted Scheifele.
But he's a great player.
Couturier is very good, but he's not going to be an offensive dynamo by any stretch at this point.
He's a good offensive player, though. I mean, he's not a dynamo, but he's still.
Mark Scheifele is a better offensive player than Sean Couturier is.
I would say Scheifele is a better offensive player than Couturier, but I still think Couturier is a guy that. I mean, he's still young. Scheifele.
No, 37 points last year for Couturier.
He can still be a consistent 45-50 point guy.
You think he still has that?
He's a legit. He's 23 years old.
I know.
I mean, he's not. It's he's still very young here. He's still a guy to me that projects as a second line center, and I think that's what the Philadelphia Flyers are hoping from him this year, as opposed to previous years where he was the third line center.
Yeah, you see, and I think that he's more of he's a very good NHL third line center, and I don't know that he's got the offensive capabilities in his game to take that next step forward and become a second line center in terms of the offensive side. His defensive responsibility from the day he entered the NHL has always been very impressive. Whether or not he's got that ability to take that next step forward and be that bona fide second line center, I'm still hesitant about. And that goes to the problems of the Flyers. I mean, you look at that third line for them, you know, it's you know, Braden Schenn, who's still young. I mean, you sort of don't think of Braden Schenn as a young player. He's only 24 years old because he's been in the league for so long now. You don't think of him as that young, but he's playing with Vincent LeCavalier, a guy that most people thought the Flyers were going to buy out, who's proven to be one of the worst free agent signings since he was bought out in Tampa Bay.
Well, it's been a huge problem because Ron Hextall can't move him. I mean, Ron Hextall has tried to move him for well over a year now.
Yeah, nobody wants to take on that salary.
And the contract is untradeable.
Yeah.
And, you know, you keep thinking that Vinny LeCavalier is going to bust out of, you know, the doldrums, really, and start producing. But he's had the game has slowed down for him, and they've basically alternated between scratching him and playing him on the third and fourth lines. Yeah. So it's unfortunate, but again, that's a Paul Holmgren contract.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Ron Hextall was saddled with that, and it's going to take him a number of years to get out from under the weight of that. Let's shift our focus to the Winnipeg Jets. As we mentioned, there's some lineup changes for the Jets. Up front, what you have is Nick Petan. He's apparently under the weather. And with Andrew Kopp still being banged up, you're going to have Patrice Cormier making his Winnipeg Jets debut for the 2015-16 season. So Cormier is going to center Thorburn and Peluso, and then the top nine is going to stay all the same. But that Cormier addition really tells me, if it's anything like last, that's a fourth line similar to last year's fourth line, which means I have trouble believing you're going to see them for much more than 5-6 minutes, depending on the tenor of the game this evening.
Well, Drew, it's obvious that with Patrice Cormier going in for Nick Petan, that line is going to have a lot more trouble creating offense. So it's quite possible that that line only sees 5, 6, 7 minutes against the Philadelphia Flyers. Good opportunity for Cormier, a guy who just hasn't been able to produce at the NHL level. For me, the big move, though, is Paul Postma going in for Ben Chiarot, because Ben Chiarot didn't play more than one shift, I believe, in the third period against the Ottawa Senators. Paul Maurice is putting Postma in. Postma's first game of the year, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see, because what that means is you're going to see Jacob Trouba and Myers together, with Trouba playing the left side.
No, Myers is actually playing the left side.
Sorry,
there.
That's what I meant to say. Myers playing the left side, which you saw towards the end of the game against Ottawa. So that's something. Maurice is keeping Enstrom and Buff together, mm-hmm. and he's keeping Myers and Trouba together.
Which a lot of people who've been looking at the Jets' right side defense, saying there's a glut of right side defensemen. They've been wanting to see somebody move to the left side. That's going to be Tyler Myers. We'll talk about that more throughout the course of the show. Let's head to break. When we come back, Dave Isaac is going to join us. He's a Philadelphia Flyers beat writer for the Camden Courier Post. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Back squeezes off a shot from a bad angle. Stopped easily by Pavlik. Jets will outlet it on the near side. And here comes Kane. In toward the middle for Wheeler at center. Back for Kane. He'll backhand it inside that Nashville end. Quickly they're out of their zone. Taylor Beck sidestepped a check and lost the puck. Stewart lined up.
12:30 in the afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Dave Isaac. Dave is a Philadelphia Flyers beat writer for the Camden Courier Post.
Dave, you wrote about this in your piece today for the Courier Post and your five things to watch about how the Flyers have now taken part in five overtimes. And, you know, I realize that they haven't had as much success as they want. But when you look at this Flyers team, it's evident that they're having trouble scoring goals, whether it's Jakub Voracek or other players. But is it just a question as well as they're not getting the right bounces and the opportune goals?
Certainly to an extent. I mean, the other night in Calgary, they ended up losing, and Wayne Simmonds, who had like seven shots in that game, puts one on. Carey Ramos saves it. Big rebound. All of a sudden, the puck's behind Michael Neubert in about 2 seconds. The Flyers have had a couple of games end that way. And you know, they're talking now about like strategy and overtime. Do we have to start playing more defensive? Our team's going to start figuring out ways to do this. But it seems like the teams that are successful in it are saying, you know what, we already got 1 point. Screw it. Go for two. You know, no holds barred, put everything on net that you possibly can and just hope for the best. But yeah, to answer your question in the short version, yeah, the Flyers have gotten some bad bounces there, and it's certainly been working against them.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Dave Isaac. Dave covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Camden Courier Post. Dave, you look at the Flyers' defense, and it's been a couple years now where this defense has sort of been, you know, frankly, too slow in this, you know, in the NHL game nowadays. Are the Flyers, is this going to be the Flyers' biggest Achilles heel and really prevent them from getting back into where they want to be, into an upper echelon team, until they can get some speed and some, you know, sort of youth back on the back end?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a couple ironies here. One being in Winnipeg, this is the last place, I believe, that Chris Pronger played an NHL game.
That's correct.
And this team has spent a lot of money and a lot of resources trying to replace that one guy and haven't been able to do even a small percentage of that. The other irony is that as bad as this defense is, I believe it's still the case that Mark Streit, who's 38 years old, their oldest defenseman, leads this team in points. So that, I guess, goes back to the offensive thing. But yeah, defense has been a problem. That was kind of the expectation. There are some prospects on the way, but this team is so strapped against the salary cap, They can't even recall one of the prospects in the American Hockey League right now. They have Davis Chirisky up with Evgeny Medvedev hurt, and it's only because his salary cap hit is $575,000. If they wanted to bring up a guy like Shane Gostisbehere, who's, you know, supposedly their best offensive defenseman prospect and the guy that's closest to being NHL ready, they can't do it because they would need almost $500,000 more.
Dave, we were talking about this last segment before we had you on. Sean Couturier back in the lineup now after missing six games, after suffering that hit to the head at the hands of former Flyer Zach Rinaldo. I guess two-part question. Were you surprised that Zach Rinaldo wasn't suspended for that hit? And do you think Sean Couturier does project as a second-line center? Do you think he can be that second-line center for the Flyers? Or do you think he's better suited for that third-line center role that he was playing the last couple of years?
Well, the first part of your question, yeah, I was shocked that Zach Rinaldo didn't get any further discipline for that hit. And I was even more shocked that the Flyers didn't seem very upset about it the night of. I mean, they said, you know, all the right things, like, yeah, we weren't happy with the hit or whatever, but I guess the old boys club and having him as a teammate for the last 3 years, guys weren't extra vocal about it. And that video that the NHL sent out from the player safety department, I mean, I've never seen one like it. It was like, yeah, he left his feet, but not by that much. And, well, you know, he does have an extensive history with the Department of Player Safety, but we were looking at this hit first, and then we would have taken that into account. I mean, I was stunned by that. To the second part of your question, I understand that Sean Couturier is a big topic of conversation in your town here, specific to Mark Scheifele. And you're right that Couturier has not really shown the offensive power that the Flyers hoped he had, that he seemed to show in Drummondville in his junior career. And for the first few years, he has been that shutdown centerman and has still been expected to put up points, even though he was starting a lot of his shifts in his defensive zone and had to travel pretty much the length of the ice against, you know, top units for the other team to do it. And he did to a certain extent. This year is supposed to be that breakout year. Last year was supposed to be also, but they kept using him in that defensive role. And, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot of differences under Dave Hakstol this year, but one of them is that there doesn't seem to be a big matchup game like there was in the past. You know, the Flyers are 14 games into their season. Couturier missed six of them, so it's not a huge sample size yet, but they're trying to put him in more offensive situations. And he's got Wayne Simmonds on his line, too, another guy who can crash the net. So the Flyers are hoping for some points out of that line, certainly.
You mentioned Dave Hakstol. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Dave Isaac of the Camden Courier Post. And Dave, you mentioned Dave Hakstol, obviously the new head coach of the Flyers. He comes over from the University of North Dakota, so we're quite familiar with him up in this area, being not far from UND. What are your impressions of him 14 games into his NHL coaching career?
Well, like I was saying, there haven't been a whole lot of changes so far. I mean, he's definitely a by the books, kind of a stern coach. Accountability is a word that's repeated an awful lot of times in that locker room. And the thing that we were hearing about him before the season was that he never gets too high and he never gets too low. And the Flyers starting the year as bad as they have, we've seen half of that where he doesn't want to be too low. And it comes off at the moment like he's trying to spin the negativity and keep that away from the team. But what we haven't seen yet is a whole lot of success to see that other side where maybe he, you know, if Jake Voracek explodes and scores five goals in three games, he won't say, you know, that he's the best player on the ice or something like that. So that it'll be interesting to see if the Flyers ever get to that point this year to see if he holds true to the other side of that, because right now he just seems very kind of a little bland in interviews, but that he's not really paid to do that. He's paid to win games. And so far, he doesn't seem to be, or seems to be level-headed, I guess, in his approach to doing that.
It's just an added bonus if he's very entertaining during interviews from all of our perspectives, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't be lying if I said I wasn't kind of hoping for John Tortorella when the Flyers are going through their coaching search just for entertainment value.
Sure.
You know, Dave, we just talked about Dave Hakstol, who's obviously not going anywhere. He was just hired as a Philadelphia Flyers coach. And you mentioned earlier that the Flyers continue to have salary cap problems. But when you look at the struggles that the Flyers have had lately, they're sitting sixth in the Metropolitan Division, out of the playoff picture. If the Flyers need to make a move, who's the first player that they look at moving? Is it Vinny LeCavalier? Is it Braden Schenn? Who do you think they would try to move, or who would they try to acquire if they decide that they need to make a trade?
I think the thing that they would want to acquire draft picks, because they want anything that they can to just get money off of their books. Vinny LeCavalier, they would love to trade Vinny LeCavalier. They've been trying for the last 2 years. Nobody wants him, especially at a $4.5 million cap hit. And it doesn't really help the cause when the Flyers put him on the bench as they're going to do tonight against the Jets. And they've done, you know, a handful of other times this season so far, but nobody's really in the market for an overpaid center that can't skate in this game. And his shot that is supposedly, you know, legendary hasn't really been there. Another guy's Luke Schenn, who actually hasn't played poorly. He's been pretty good for the Flyers when he's gotten opportunities this year. But he's another guy, $3.6 million against the cap. I believe his contract is done after this year. So another guy that they would like to, you know, potentially get a return for, but nobody's interested in him either. So they're certainly looking to get rid of some of the higher end contracts, just so that they can get space more than anything, because even when they get a guy hurt, they can't bring up the prospect that they want to bring up. So I think that's the thing that they're really looking for in return most.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Dave Isaac. Dave covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Camden Courier Post. And Dave, you mentioned his brother. You mentioned Luke Schenn. I want to ask you about Braden Schenn. Obviously, you know, again, another guy familiar to Manitobans, given that he played his junior hockey with the Brandon Wheat Kings. Acquired from the Los Angeles Kings, it seems like it was so many years ago, but he's still pretty young at 24 years old. You know, do we know what Braden Schenn is as an NHL player? Is this it? You know, is he the sort of a 40, 45-year-old point guy, or does he have another level? Because, you know, drafted fifth overall back in 2009, everybody had such high expectations for him. I'm not sure that those expectations are still realistic.
Right. I think that's one of the cases where when he was traded to the Flyers and deemed the best player not in the NHL, that's one of the things kind of like his brother Luke dealt with, where there was so much hype it starts to work against him. And I think as time expires here, we are seeing this maybe this is his ceiling, a guy that can be pretty good offensively, but is also quite streaky. And, you know, he's not going to be somebody that you rely on defensively. So he's not necessarily going to be a huge part of your team, but can accent with some offense here and there. And he was an interesting case over the summer because Couturier gets a big extension. Voracek gets a big extension. And Ron Hextall says, well, we'll wait and see what Braden's going to do this year. And that was kind of the message sent to him to say, now's the time, buddy boy. You better pick it up. And even as early as training camp, he was on like the fifth line. He wasn't even part of the plans right off the bat and kind of worked his way up into the lineup with a couple AHL guys on his line, and now obviously he's here and in the picture there. But I think we are kind of seeing basically what he is, and it'll be interesting to see. He's got a $2.5 million cap hit. He'll be an RFA this summer if the Flyers are going to try and re-sign him, what that price might be, or if they're going to try and flip him at the deadline. And I wonder what the return would be for a guy who, you know, hasn't hit the ceiling that was set for him before his NHL career began and makes $2.5 million to boot. It'll be interesting to see.
Dave, it's Hockey Hall of Fame weekend, so we got to ask you about Chris Pronger. He's going into the Hall of Fame this weekend with a couple of other good defensemen as well, Nicholas Lidstrom and Phil Housley, and Fedorov isn't too bad either. But Chris Pronger obviously had some amazing years with the Philadelphia Flyers. He didn't end up winning the Stanley Cup, but they did go to the final. He, of course, won the Stanley Cup with the Anaheim Ducks. When you look at Chris Pronger's career, is he going to be considered the most dominant defenseman of that era?
I think so, yeah. And I think a lot of the perception for Chris Pronger comes with his persona off the ice. But everybody that you talk to about him as a player, he was the same way in his game as he is vocally on the ice. Just the confidence that he exudes makes everybody else more comfortable on the ice. That's what I've, you know, heard from some of his former teammates this week as we, you know, gather quotes for stories for Monday's ceremony. But it's interesting that the career that he had with, you know, Edmonton, right, and Anaheim winning the cup there, the Flyers could have been a bigger chapter of his career if Michael Grabowski's stick doesn't hit him in the eye and his career ends. But for a short period of time, he meant an awful lot to the Flyers. And we were talking about their defense a little bit earlier. They've tried to replace him, and it's an impossible feat.
Dave, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, they say that the best defense is actually a very good goaltender. And so far this season, the Flyers have been getting some quality goaltending from Michael Neuwirth, who they acquired as a free agent in the offseason. You know, he sort of bounced around the last number of years, the Islanders and the Capitals, of course, and then briefly with the Sabres. You know, he's going to get the start in goal for the Flyers tonight against the Jets. Why has he been so good so far this year?
That's a difficult question to answer. I mean, he's kind of been a streaky guy in the past, and this was supposed to be the realization that maybe he wasn't a starting goaltender, but he's played like one so far. And Steve Mason's kind of had some bad luck where he hasn't been in the lineup for, you know, one reason or another. He's sick now, and he had some personal issues he was going through last month. But Neuwirth has certainly taken made the most of that opportunity, and it's scary to think, you know, the Flyers have a pretty awful record now. I wonder what they would have been if they didn't have decent goaltending, because Neuwirth has kept him into some games this year, and his teammates haven't been able to help him out very much. But he seems to quietly be, kind of making Mason sweat a little bit. And it was interesting at the beginning of the year when he was perceived to be a backup, and it wasn't like, you know, oh, yeah, I'm here to support Steve or whatever. It was, I want to get in as many games as possible. And I guess you would kind of expect that from any player, but he seemed to carry himself thinking that maybe he could push to get a share of that starter's job here.
Dave Isaac covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Camden Courier Post. Dave, really appreciate your time this afternoon, and we'll see you in a few hours at the arena.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks very much, Dave. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Dave Isaac Flyers beat writer for the Camden Courier Post. In case you missed any of that interview, we'll have it available on tsn1290.ca and, of course, on our website, illegalcurve.com. Might as well just subscribe to the show on iTunes. You get it sent. You get all the interviews. You get all the audio. You get all the shows. You get everything we do that gets sent to you automatically if you subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. This segment of the program brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. Of course, tonight between the Jets and the Flyers, it's the Hockey Fights Cancer game at MTS Center. So the Jets will be wearing this special lavender-colored warm-up jerseys. I believe those will be available for auction as well. So if you're looking to help support cancer, maybe get yourself a unique piece of paraphernalia, check it out. The Winnipeg Jets website would have all the information regarding the Hockey Fights Cancer charity auction and everything along those lines.
Yeah, I wonder what Keener was thinking of the Montreal Canadiens jersey that they released for the Heritage Winter Classic.
It's in rapid fire. You can't skip ahead. You can't get too far ahead of yourself.
I really like that jersey.
I like that jersey too. Yeah. But you're ruining rapid fire right now, and we still have another 2 hours before we get to that. Anyways, want to talk about the Jets' defense heading into tonight's game. We spoke about it briefly before we brought on Dave Isaac. Again, in case you're just joining us, some changes to the Jets' defense. You're going to see Toby Enstrom and Dustin Byfuglien paired together. That's sort of the standard pairing that we've gotten used to here. And the Jets have decided to move Tyler Myers from the right side to the left side. He's going to be playing with Jacob Trouba. We saw this briefly for the third period at the end of the Ottawa Senators game. So we're going to see, at least to start tonight's contest between the Jets and the Flyers, Tyler Myers playing on his off wing with Jacob Trouba. And then your third pairing of defensemen is Mark Stewart on the left side, and making his season debut for the Winnipeg Jets is Paul Postma. Your thoughts on this move, Ezzy, about getting really loading up on that top four of the Winnipeg Jets defense? Do you think Tyler Myers will be able to handle the responsibilities of playing on his off wing tonight against the Flyers?
Yeah, Tyler Myers should be able to handle those responsibilities, Drew. It's a little bit surprising in the sense that before the season started, we had Shane Knighty on, and we talked about if there was going to be one defenseman that switched from the right side to the left side, who would it be? And the answer was Jacob Trouba. So in that sense, I'm a little bit surprised that they've decided to have Tyler Myers on the left side and stick with Jacob Trouba on the right side. I'm not surprised that they're sticking with that pair for this game, because as we talked about in the second segment, Drew, Paul Maurice didn't play Ben Chiarot at all in the third period. And played Trouba with Myers and basically went to five defensemen, similar to kind of what you saw with Chicago in the playoffs when they went to four or five defensemen because Tiemannin and Van Riemsdyk were injured.
Yeah.
But
you couldn't trust Rönnblad or anybody else at that point in time.
You couldn't. And I'm not surprised in the sense that I think what this move means is they're trying to get more ice time for both Trouba and Myers. And Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun, our good buddy, wrote about this yesterday about how you have to get some more ice time for some of these players. And
sure,
this doesn't necessarily mean that Ben Chiarot's going to be in the press box for the next 2 weeks. I didn't think Ben Chiarot had a particularly bad game against Ottawa. And Paul Maurice said that himself. He said it wasn't that Chiarot wasn't playing well. It was that Jacob Trouba was playing very well. And that's why he wanted to give Trouba more time. Now, obviously, he's not going to tell us the 100% whole truth. He probably wasn't happy with a few reads that Ben Chiarot made. But I think aside from the Montreal game, Ben Chiarot's been pretty solid all season. Sure, he's had his good games and bad games, but since coming into the NHL last year, being paired up with Buff, I think he's been pretty good. So I think, you know, you're maybe a little bit worried that the pair of Mark Stewart and Paul Postma, you're worried that they might have some difficulties with that Philadelphia Flyers third line, and they haven't played at all together.
Sure.
But to me, you want to get Trouba playing more, and you want to have Myers ice time more, because last game, Drew, against Ottawa, Dustin Byfuglien played, I believe, 28 minutes, and Jacob Trouba was around 23, 24 minutes, which was the most of the season for Trouba. But I think you want Trouba playing that much. I think that's been an issue in the past because Trouba doesn't always go out there for the first power play. Mm-hmm. Sometimes his minutes fall in.
Usually, I think he's got 8 seconds of power play time per game on average so far this season.
And that has partly to do with the trend of of playing four forwards and a defenseman sometimes on the power play, Drew, but also has to do with the fact that Tobias Enstrom, Dustin Byfuglien, Tyler Myers, those three defensemen, they're going to use those guys more on the power play than they are Trouba. I actually particularly would want to see Trouba out there more on the power play because of his offensive abilities. But right now, there's other defensemen ahead of him on the depth chart. I wouldn't expect Trouba to play a little bit more on the power play as the season progresses, but the point being that I think they want to get him involved more in the game and up towards 22, 23 minutes a game as opposed to 18 or 19 minutes. Trouba's one of their most talented defensemen, if not their most talented defenseman. He hasn't scored a goal yet this year. He's only got 2 points on the season. I think they want to get him going.
I agree wholeheartedly with what you've said. Trouba's averaging 19 minutes and 59 seconds of ice time so far this year. That puts him third of the Jets' right side defensemen. And so we knew coming into the season that there were too many right side defensemen and not enough minutes to go around. I think that the reason you mentioned what Shane, you know, when we had Shane on it before the season started, you thought that Trouba would be the guy moving to the left side. I think the reason why you're not seeing that, at least to start, why you're seeing Myers moving there, is that I think Jacob Trouba has been struggling to some extent to start this year. And is that a function of not playing enough minutes per game to get into the groove of things? I think to some extent that's probably the reason. Certain players need, you know, have an ideal number of minutes, and that's where they perform their best. Maybe it's 22, 23 minutes, 24 minutes. I mean, Jacob Trouba is an absolute stud on the back end, and sometimes if he's only playing the 19 minutes a game, it's just not enough for him to really get the feel for the game and get the confidence necessary. You move Myers to the left side. I mean, with those top four defensemen that the Jets have, Enstrom and Byfuglien, we know they can log big minutes. Myers and Trouba, we know they can log big minutes. If Myers is comfortable on the right-hand side, it would not surprise me in the least bit to see those guys really log upwards 24, 25 minutes respectively, meaning that the third pairing is only going to be necessary for 10, 11, 12 minutes a game. You know, never mind, you factor in penalties and everything else. You know, you don't know exactly how that's going to play out. But with that top four, if they're able to play, if Myers is able to play on the offside, I'm not as worried as about that third pairing, which admittedly is not the best third pairing in the NHL. But if it's only on the ice for 10, 11 minutes, especially at home tonight, where you can get them on the ice in the matchups that you want, I think you're a lot more confident if you're Paul Maurice. And you want to see, can you put your top four defense, which would be one of the top four defensemen, really, which would be a top four defense in the NHL.
Well, you have your four best defensemen in your top four.
That's right.
No disrespect to Mark Stewart. No,
he would admit that as himself.
But anybody who listens to the show knows I'm a huge fan of Mark Stewart. I mean, he does all of those little things, block shots, makes a big hit, he can drop the gloves, whatever. I mean, it's not that I don't like Mark Stewart. It's that Trouba and Myers together with Byfuglien and Enstrom, those are your most talented defenseman, right? So that's what the strategy is here, Drew. And I think you also have to factor in who they're playing. The Philadelphia Flyers are struggling to create offense now. Not that they don't have guys that can hurt you. Voracek, Giroux, Couturier, Braden Schenn when he's going. These guys can score goals, but right now they're struggling. I think this is a big game for Paul Postma. He gets a shot here to come in on the third pair. Ben Sherrod has been struggling a little bit. Paul Maurice didn't play him a lot in the third period against Ottawa. So it's an opportunity for him to prove that he can get more games, right? So, you know, again, I don't expect Postma to be in the lineup for too long, but if he plays well enough and Paul Maurice and Charlie Heidi decide that he's a better option in there over Ben Sherrod, he might stay in there for a little while. So it's a big step for him, and it's a big game for Jacob Trouba, who has started to play a little bit more and wants to get his offensive game going. As far as Trouba's season goes, Drew, I think there's no question that he struggled, not just on the offensive side of the game, but on the defensive side of the game. And him and Mark Stewart have obviously been a pair for the last 3 years together, and sometimes I think that his defensive responsibilities don't allow him to jump up into the play a lot. I think you saw that a little bit against Toronto. Trouba got a couple of scoring chances. You saw it a little bit against Ottawa, especially the fact that he played the most that he's played this season. But I think this is something that Paul Maurice is looking at sticking with, and especially if Paul Postma is able to prove that he can play a third pairing role with Mark Stewart, then you maybe see these pairings carry forward into the road trip coming up?
Well, it'll certainly be something to monitor as the Jets and the Flyers get underway at MTS Center tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Winnipeg Jets game day. When we come back, David Pagnotta, editor-in-chief of the fourthperiod.com, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome to the second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program. He is the editor-in-chief of the fourthperiod.com, David Pagnotta. David, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. How you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, David?
No complaints.
No complaints. That's good.
Other than I got to watch the Leafs almost all the time, but other than that,
I was going to say you're based in Toronto. So for a guy who's based in Toronto and not complaining about the Toronto Maple Leafs, I say that's a very admirable position you've decided to take.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm one of the few that actually accepted the fact. And first of all, I'm not a Leaf fan, but just accepting the fact that it's going to be a rocky road for the next little bit. Just makes my job a lot easier.
Wanted to ask you, not about the Leafs, but about their head coach, Mike Babcock. It's announced earlier this week that he is going to be the head coach for Team Canada at the upcoming World Cup of Hockey. I guess it's sort of a two-part question. One, what are your feelings about this World Cup of Hockey, given its bizarre format with the under-23 team and then the team rest of Europe? Do you think that takes away from the legitimacy of the tournament? And then second of all, are you surprised that Babcock got the call and decided to be the head coach and come back for another kick at the can, taking a Team Canada into an international tournament?
Well, I've always liked, or I used to always like, the World Cup of Hockey when it was around. You know, it certainly highlighted, for the most part, the best in the National Hockey League, minus a couple other, you know, a few players from certain nations.
Sure.
They rushed into it a little bit, which explains why, you know, they have these two specialty teams, the North American under, you know, the young stars team, I guess, and then the Team Europe, giving the other nations, I guess, the ability to qualify down the road for these, you know, for the tournament itself. So I understand it. I'm not fond of it. I understand it. I think the teams will be pretty cool. And the Young Stars team for North America certainly is going to be an interesting one to watch. But I like it. I like the format. I like the fact that it's back. It's certainly something that for the National Hockey League they can utilize between them and the players as another revenue source. So that certainly makes sense. And then in terms of Babcock, I'm not surprised at all. I think this is a decision that he made, wanting to represent, you know, his country again, and given the success that he's had at the international level, why wouldn't he want to jump back on it? So I think the Canadians certainly have put themselves in a good position in terms of who they have behind the bench, between Babcock, Quenneville, and the rest of the staff. It's going to be a fun tournament. I'm looking forward to it.
Dave, you mentioned the Toronto Maple Leafs earlier, and you're based in Toronto, and of course they're struggling, but many of us expected the Toronto Maple Leafs to struggle. When you look at some of the other teams that are struggling, whether it's the Western Conference with the Colorado Avalanche or the Calgary Flames or the Anaheim Ducks, or if it's in the East with the Columbus Blue Jackets or a few other teams, Detroit has struggled a little bit, even though they won last night against the Leafs. But of all of the teams that are struggling, which one do you think has the best chance of turning it around and getting into the playoffs?
Well, I think there's a few of them, to be perfectly honest. I mean, typically throughout, you know, the course of a season, we see the ups and downs and the trends that certain teams go on, and the you know, bottom ranking teams always have a stretch or two throughout the season, be it, you know, the course of a month or four, you know, two, three, 4 weeks, where they're surprising a lot of the opposition. Now, it typically happens down the stretch, when they've got nothing to lose. They know they're out of the playoffs, and they're just, you know, trying to play the evil team that crushes the hopes and dreams of, you know, another legit playoff contender. But I think we're seeing a little bit more of that the beginning of this season. And some teams just not being able to click right off the bat, and some guys just not being able to get the job done. You look at Calgary and you look at their blue line and how good it's supposed to be and how good Dougie Hamilton is supposed to be and how good Mark Giordano has been, and they haven't been on the same level this season. You know, the younger guys up front, everyone just seems to be struggling, or for the most part, throughout the course of the first, you know, 5 weeks of the season. You know, the Anaheim Ducks are certainly going to rebound at some point. They need a few kicks in the backside on a variety of different fronts, and not having Ryan Getzlaf in the lineup has hurt them, although, you know, some argue it didn't really impact them significantly in a good way prior to that. Detroit doesn't have Pavel Datsyuk. He's coming back, and he's going to be part of the lineup on a regular basis soon, and that's going to contribute to, you know, spreading out the offense a little bit more and creating more depth. I think these three teams specifically, based on their performance last season and based on the quality of their rosters, have a chance to, for the most part, considering how early it still is, get back into the swing of things. So Colorado's a team that, you know, I'm not totally sold. Their defense is still an area of concern. Overall two-way play in terms of the roster up front, you know, is an area of concern as well. They've got some holes to fill, and they're looking to make some improvements. And then you look at Carolina, who's surprisingly doing a lot better than a lot of people expected, myself included, off the bat. And they'll probably come back down to earth in the next little bit as well.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is David Pagnotta. David is the editor-in-chief of thefourthperiod.com. David, wanted to ask you about the Montreal Canadiens. We know that they've been off to a tremendous start to the year, 12-2-1. The cream of the crop of the NHL, of the Eastern Conference. But ultimately, for Montreal, it's going to matter what do they do in the playoffs. They've been a very good regular season team for the last couple of years. Last year, of course, they went out relatively meekly to the Tampa Bay Lightning in the second round. Do you think that this Habs team, despite, you know, their tremendous record to start the year, do you think that this Habs team is built to make a long playoff run, or do you expect them that they're going, if they don't get really some additional resources, particularly up the middle, that they might wither and die on the vine when it comes to the playoffs?
Well, yeah, I mean, they certainly need to play a little bit more physically down the stretch if they're going to be a legit Stanley Cup contender. They're certainly a contender in the Eastern Conference, but in terms of being a legit Stanley Cup contender, they still don't have that nasty physical aspect that comes with their game. Now they play a tremendously great defensive game, and they're very, very, very fast. And they're certainly getting, some key contributions from some, you know, surprising suspects, whether it's, you know, Paul Byron or Dale Weiss. These are guys that have significantly improved, you know, just even from last season. I was talking to a few players, and I was in Montreal earlier this week on Tuesday to catch them play the Senators. Dale Weiss is a player that I've talked to a couple other NHL players about that have played him this year, and they were surprised by the fact that, you know, not the fact that he's got 8 goals on the season, but by how much better he is compared to last season. He certainly improved his game. Whatever he did in the offseason has certainly worked for them, and it's worked for the Canadiens because he's playing as a player whom these guys are not surprised that he's got 8 goals on the year. Because of how well that he's possessing the puck and how well that he's creating offensive chances and throwing the body around. Canadians would love to be able to have this consistent throughout the course of the regular season. Who knows? Maybe it's going to happen. But I think for them, even more so than finding a legit number one center, and I believe that's something that they're going to look at down the road, and Eric Staal is continuously somebody that is linked to the Canadians in terms of a potential option. If the Carolina Hurricanes or when the Hurricanes end up looking to move him later on in the season. But I think just from a physical standpoint, this is a team that's going to have to address that going down the stretch into the playoffs. Great defensive team, great goaltending, especially, you know, with Carey Price out. Mike Condon has just stepped in and really not lost a beat. But I think the physical aspect, more so than anything, is the bigger concern for the Habs in terms of solidifying their legitimacy as a cup contender.
You know, Dave, you had a tweet that made me laugh the other day. I think it was 2 days ago, and you tweeted out, "Does Marian Gaborik still play hockey?" And, you know, I know you go to L.A. quite often, and the Kings had a rough start to the season, but they turned it around, winning 6 games in a row, and now they're back in a playoff spot. I know it's early, but when you consider the money that they threw at Marian Gaborik and how good he was the last time they won the Stanley Cup in 2013, are you surprised at how poorly he started?
Yes. Yeah. I'm not surprised that he goes through slumps, because that's just how he's been throughout his entire career. But I'm very surprised that he hasn't gotten off to even a decent start to the regular season after the first month. And a lot of people are surprised. The LA Kings are surprised, and they're not happy about it. Daryl Sutter, their head coach, isn't too thrilled about it. That's why he's been juggling the lines quite often in Los Angeles. Dustin Brown has reclaimed the position on that first line with Anze Kopitar, but now it's a matter of finding who's going to play with him. Is it going to be Tanner Pearson? Is it going to be Marian Gaborik? Is it going to have to be somebody from outside the organization that GM Dean Lombardi has to go out and look for if Marian Gaborik can't solidify that position on that first line? It's an area of concern for Los Angeles. They're going to give him the benefit of the doubt because it is early and because the rest of the team is performing well, and because Jeff Carter, Tyler Toffoli, and Milan Lucic have been clicking so well together, and the defense isn't as questionable as the team expected. Going into the regular season, they were really looking at that defense as a possible area of concern, but Braden McNabb has stepped up, Alec Martinez has stepped up, and Jamie McBain, since jumping back in the lineup. They've only lost once with him. I think they're 6-1 with him in the lineup, and they were, I believe, 15-4 last season with him in the lineup. So, and not the only reason why they were doing so well, but he has played a solid role on that back end. So that's not an area of concern for them right now. But Marian Gaborik is somebody that they're going to have to take a look at. If he is still, playing this type of hockey a month from now, then yeah, Dean Lombardi is going to have to make a serious decision at some point in terms of whether or not they've got to add to this roster and just, hope that he comes out of it after the fact. But he'll have to re-earn his spot up on the top of the lineup.
David, last question for you. We appreciate your time this afternoon joining us here on the program. When the 2016-17 NHL season begins, so next season, mm-hmm. Steven Stamkos is a member of which team?
Oh, boy. Based on everything I know now, or from what I've heard from a variety of different people, I can't answer that specific question, but I will say that based on everything that I've been told from the summer till now, I would be surprised if he's still on the Tampa Bay Lightning. I'll give you that one.
And do you expect that they're going to have to move him mid-season, or that they'll just lose him for nothing when the season ends?
I think if they believe they're still a legit Stanley Cup contender, I believe they hold on to him. And then look to trade his rights around the draft and get some kind of draft pick for him. And if he ends up in Toronto or Calgary or wherever, then they'll worry about trying to sign him at that point. But I think if they still believe that they're a legit Stanley Cup contender, then trading Steven Stamkos midseason is very tough.
David Pagnotta is the editor-in-chief of thefourthperiod.com. David, appreciate your time this afternoon. Enjoy a great day of hockey ahead of you on this Saturday evening.
Can't wait. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, David.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Let's head to break. You're listening to TSN 1290's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll talk about Blake Wheeler.
The loose puck. Wheeler for Ladd. Redirect to Bufflin. Down to the goal line for Little. Top of the circle for Wheeler. Near side. Wheeler on the offside. Scores! Great passing by the Winnipeg Jets. And Blake Wheeler finishes it off. His sixth of the year, his first power play goal of the year, and the Jets have their two-goal lead back. It's 3-1.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg. That's a goal from Blake Wheeler earlier this season, as he has done. He's been off to an absolutely torrid start offensively for the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets entering in to their 15th game tonight, and Blake Wheeler, 6 goals, 11 assists for 17 points in 14 games played thus far this season. This segment of the program brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Ezzie, we knew Blake Wheeler is talented. That's not coming as a surprise to anybody. But thus far, he's usually a guy who's actually been a slow starter to the start of many of his seasons. Not this year, as Blake Wheeler, as I mentioned, 17 points in the first 14 games played this year. Last year, 69 points in 82 games played. The pace that he's on right now would put him over a point a game, would put him among the offensive leaders in the entire NHL, where he currently resides, you know, the early point of this season. What's been the difference for Blake Wheeler in your mind? You know, why is he off to such an impressive start to the 2015-16 season for the Winnipeg Jets?
I don't think there's anything that's different. I mean, this is a guy who has been one of their top offensive players for the last 3 years now, 4 years, including this year. And this is a guy who was named to the American Olympic team in 2014. This has been a leader for the Jets. You know, he was just given the assistant captain patch last year, but he's been a leader for this team for many years, basically since they came over from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still relatively young. But to me, Drew, we're talking about a player, I think, who should be in conversation as a top 10 right winger. And the way Blake Wheeler is playing, you mentioned he's got 17 points, which is fourth overall in the NHL. It's incredible. And
yeah,
you mentioned, you know, if he keeps up this pace, he'll get 90 points. Is he?
I'm sorry, let me interrupt you right there. Do you think he has that in him? He's never been a point per game player. He's never, you know, hit 82 and 82.
He is right now.
Right now he is. Do you think that, you know, he can keep this going throughout the entirety of the season? We've seen him go on hot streaks where he's been, you know, like he's doing now, you know, more than a point a game for, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month at a time. But we've never seen him put it together for month after month after month after month. Do you think this year is different? Do you see a different player out there, one who is, I mean, this is a guy who's got all the talent in the world. That's why he was drafted so high that many years ago, fifth overall in, you know, almost a decade ago. Do you think that, you know, he's always seems like he's been a bit of a late bloomer. Does he have another level that he's finally achieving this season?
Yeah, I think he does. And if he ends up getting 80 points this year, I think then you start talking about, is he the fourth or fifth best right winger in the NHL? Alex Ovechkin is clearly the best right winger in the NHL. But when you're talking about other right wingers, I mean, Jakub Voracek mm-hmm. is obviously coming into Winnipeg tonight, and we'll see him. He's an elite right winger. But I think you're talking about someone who you could argue is a top five right winger in the NHL. And when you look, the thing with Blake Wheeler is when the Jets need a goal on a nightly basis, he seems to be the one who gets that goal or sets up that goal. Last game against Ottawa, he makes an incredible play, aggressive forecheck behind the net, creates a turnover, gets the puck out to Andrew Ladd, who's in front of the net, left alone, and that's the goal that allows the Jets to come back. That was the 2-1 goal, if you remember. He gets the big goals time and time again, and he's been doing that. Like I said, this isn't something new, but yeah, he does look like he has a little bit of more of a bounce to his step. He's a guy that they put out there in 3-on-3 overtime. He's such an excellent skater, and he's so big that he's tough to defend, Drew. I mean, the guy can come on either wing, and if he comes on the off wing, he's even more dangerous because then he has a different angle coming down the left wing. He's got a great shot. He has excellent vision on the ice. You know, he's not the most physical guy, but if he needs to, we've seen him drop the gloves in years past. So mm-hmm. to me, Blake Wheeler is a top five right winger in the NHL. You know, it's a great water cooler argument. You could say, well, is he the fourth best, the fifth best, is he the tenth best? The point being, other teams have to defend against Blake Wheeler, and they strategize against Blake Wheeler because he has that combination of side and skill. He's a game breaker. He is a game breaker. He's got 17 points in 14 games right now, and he deserves most of those points. None of those points aren't earned. And I think, you know, with Paul Maurice, you know that Blake Wheeler is going to always be the guy that you turn to in close games. So, you know, what is it? Is there a secret recipe? I mean, he is a guy that's always come into camp shape, in good shape. And sure, Drew, he started slowly in previous years, not this year.
No, not yet this year at all. I mean, his numbers are, you mentioned, you know, among the best right wingers in the NHL. I mean, Patrick Kane currently leads with 19 points in 14 games played. But Blake Wheeler second right behind him at, you know, 17 points so far. You know,
he's an elite player. And I think the right difference this year, Drew, is that everybody knew that Blake Wheeler was a great player. You mentioned he was a top five pick of the Coyotes, and he struggled to get it going with the Boston Bruins. That's why he was traded.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at his numbers over the last few years, he's been pretty consistent, 60-plus points. the last couple of years, right? You mentioned he had 69 points last year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this has been a top offensive player for the Jets.
61 last year, 69 the year before that.
Sorry, 61, right. Yeah. The 69
But he's always been, you know, for the last few years since he's been here in Winnipeg, you know, he's been around that 65-point total. 61 last year, 69, 64, take out the lockout year. So he's been that 65-point guy. And he's been a very good 65-point guy.
Right.
But, I mean, this year, do you think... I mean, you know, asking players to take, you know, 65 points doesn't come around every day in the NHL nowadays. It's a good season. But to take that next step and be that top flight right winger who's up in the 75 to 80 point category just at a point a game or just under a point a game, that's another step forward. You usually don't see a player take that step when they're the age of, when they're, you know, 29 years old like Blake Wheeler is. It's an unusual in this day and age to see a guy take that additional step forward.
See, I guess I look at it from a different angle, Drew. To me, he's already a top-flight right winger and has been a top-flight right winger for the last 4 years. The point totals, to me, don't change my opinion of that. Like, to me, the difference between 61 and 81 points, sure, obviously that's a big increase in your point totals,
mm-hmm.
but especially with the Jets and the way that they played last year, sometimes, you know, having to play a more of a defensive style because you needed those points. Blake Wheeler also changed lines last year, playing with Mark Scheifele and Matthew Perreault for a lot of the season. Then you had Drew Stafford up on the top line. I think Ladd, Little, Wheeler, there's no reason to believe that that line isn't going to stay together right now. But so will he sustain, you know, the pace that he's on? Probably not. I wouldn't expect him to finish the season with 90 points, but I also wouldn't be surprised if he finishes the season with close to 80 points because of the way that he has started the season and the way he's progressed as an everyday NHLer. I mean, this is a big leader on the team, and he's a guy that's shown time and time again that he can take the team on his back, go down the ice. I mean, this is an elite player in every respect. He's an incredible skater. He's got an excellent shot. He's an excellent playmaker. All of those intangibles are there. And we've seen Blake Wheeler after games when the Jets lose. He really seems to take it a lot harder than other players. Not saying that other leaders on the team like Mark Stewart and Andrew Ladd don't take it hard, but Blake Wheeler is the type of guy that you know, shows his heart on his sleeve, wears his heart on his sleeve is the expression, if I can get it right. But no, the point totals are there, Drew. That's great. I mean, you know that Blake Wheeler, you know, is a top offensive player. I think he's the best offensive player for the Jets, but to me, he's been a top flight right winger for many years now.
It's getting to the point where actually you can begin to talk about his contract, which pays him $5.6 million this season. That's a salary cap hit.
It's a good deal.
It's a good deal. It's getting to the point where his performance, he's badly outplayed, positively outplayed from the Jets' perspective, what he's actually earning right now in terms of his performance.
He's got 3 years left on the deal, right?
Yeah, the Jets have to be looking at that contract and saying, well, you know, this is a hell of a deal for us right now. We're getting a guy who's, you know, got 3 years left after this season at $5.8 million, and if he, you know, even if he stays at the 65-point mark, you're happy paying that salary for a guy who's at that performance.
And
if he keeps his game up at this higher level offensively, with due respect to your opinion that he's always been the top five, you know, right winger.
Well, I didn't say he was always.
Sorry,
but
lately,
last
couple of
3 years,
yeah.
I would say.
You're right. I don't want to put words into your mouth.
No, that's fine. And I think that when you talk about the point totals, you have to also factor in scoring has gone down a little bit over the last 4 or 5 years.
Certainly.
Right? So I wouldn't get too fixated on the point totals. I know that's kind of what we look at, but the point is he's an all-around player who is always put in those important situations for the Jets. The Jets always put him out there when they need a goal.
He's certainly one of the leaders on this Winnipeg Jets team. Something I don't know you necessarily could have said when he first came here to Winnipeg. He was still trying to find his feet a little bit under him, you know, after the time in Phoenix where he was drafted by the Coyotes, never played for them, then Boston, then Atlanta, and he's certainly taken on that leadership mantle in the Winnipeg Jets dressing room. There's a, you know, I don't want to hearken on it, but I think there's probably a reason why Evander Kane said that he wanted to fight Blake Wheeler and Andrew Ladd most of all in the NHL. I think it has something to do with the leadership qualities that everybody brings to the table in that instance.
And Blake Wheeler, too, you know, I think he's not a talker. He's a doer. And he goes out on the ice and he lets his play do the talking. And I think that's something that should be respected about Blake Wheeler. And again, Drew, you know, the start that he's off to, even though he doesn't sustain it, it's been fun to watch because, for the most part, when the puck is on his stick, you expect something to happen.
Certainly should be a good matchup for Blake Wheeler tonight against a slow-moving and not very talented Philadelphia Flyers defense. We'll see if he can keep his offensive juggernaut nature going tonight against the Flyers. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Team Canada entry at the upcoming 2016 World Cup of Hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290.